It's the Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We are talking today about Wisconsin Public Radio's election series, Beyond the Ballot. We are asking people around the state six questions that dig a little deeper into their relationship with voting. Bridget Bowden is special projects reporter at Wisconsin Public Radio. She projects manage the Beyond the Ballot series. Bridget, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Barry Burden is a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's director of the Elections Research Center at the UW and the Lyons Family Chair in Electoral Politics. Barry, welcome.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
And yes, our executive producer pointed out that this is an extremely alliterative segment, but we will go with it. If you want to call in, 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR is where you can email. We're going to be talking about the first question that you have asked today, Bridget. Why this question? Well, first of all, what is the question and what did you learn from it?
So it's a fairly straightforward question. Are you going to vote in this year's elections? We kept it kind of intentionally vague. We didn't tell them which elections because we wanted to know what elections were the most important elections to the people out there.
So because we do have a primary that is happening actually right now.
Oh, and we started asking these questions back in February. So there were several elections looking forward. So we wanted to know what elections were the most important to people and if they're planning on voting, and then also if they voted in 2016.
Okay, so what was the general response to this?
So most people say enthusiastically that they are going to vote. That might just be because, you know, we've talked to people who are engaged in politics. It might be because they're lying. We're not really sure.
You tend to find these people out at events, right? Or in groups that are kind of politically engaged.
Well, so for Beyond the Ballot, our goal this year is to interview 500 people across the state. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot. So we're going to find them in a variety of ways. The first being large events. So our first probably 50 interviews we actually did at the Wisconsin Public Television Garden Expo earlier this year. We set up a table, and as people walked by, we stopped them for an interview. We're also seeking out groups on our own that we want to hear from. So, for example, last week I reached out to the Wisconsin Association for the Deaf and did some interviews with some of their members.
Are you reaching out to areas that may or may not listen to public radio and kind of figuring out if they're voting?
Yeah, so our goal is to reach a wide variety of people. So we're not just going for public radio listeners. We want to get a good although it's not a scientific sample,
right.
We're not doing any sort of poll. We do want to try our best to get a diverse group of people.
So I'm interested in the people who say, yes, I'm voting this year. First of all, what have they said they're voting for? Are they focused on November? Or are they focused on the primaries, the special elections? What's the deal?
It varies person to person, but I would say generally people look to November. Mm. If you ask them if they're voting this year, they're going to say yes in November.
Yes. And did they vote in 2016? That's like the big question here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, most people say they did vote in 2016. I've talked to a few who did not for various reasons, including I've interviewed quite a few people who were not 18 in 2016. So that's one reason why you wouldn't be able to vote.
Is there a sense that there are younger people that are going to be going to the polls this year that didn't necessarily go to the polls 2 years ago?
Yeah, from the people I've talked to, I went to East High School in Madison and talked to a couple of government classes, U.S. government classes, and most of those students were really looking forward to voting. And for many of them, it was going to be their first time voting in November.
We are talking about our Beyond the Ballot series that WPR is doing now through the election. We're going to bring in Barry Burden here. Barry, do you think that those responses reflect the reality, or is this just a sample of WPR kinds of people?
Well, it's probably a mix of the two, and I think the people who say they are likely to vote really intend to do that. It's sort of an aspiration. I think a lot of us view voting as a responsibility, but also something that's part of our duty as a citizen. So there are a lot of people who intend to vote, but things do get in the way and there are distractions. And so some of these folks may end up not being voters in November. That said, we're seeing a lot of engagement really around the country this year in a way we don't normally see in a midterm election. So it may be that turnout's a bit higher than we've seen in recent midterms in Wisconsin.
And you study voting patterns in Wisconsin. Generally, how many people turn out for the primary versus the general election?
Well, Wisconsin has traditionally had one of the highest turnout rates in the country, and that's especially true in a general election in a presidential year. But in 2016, the turnout rate flagged just a little bit, and we declined actually more than just about any other state from 2012 to 2016. So there may be a bit of a rebound here in 2018, bringing some people back in to the voting process who stepped out of it in 2016. Turnout in primaries is really variable. It depends entirely on who the set of candidates are and whether it's an engaging contest. I think this year we're lucky that in August there will be a competitive primary for governor on the Democratic side with 10 candidates running on the ballot. And on the Republican side, two candidates running for the U.S. Senate seat to oppose Tammy Baldwin in November. So I think there are good reasons for both Republican and Democratic supporters to turn out in August.
And there is no early voting here, right?
There is early voting through a back door in Wisconsin.
Okay.
It's really absentee voting, but clerks around the state allow voters to show up at the clerk's office and vote in person early. And in cities like Madison, there are actually early voting opportunities in libraries and on college campuses and elsewhere. So it's a trend that has expanded, making use of what really was an absentee voting law.
And have you figured out why in 2016 fewer people actually voted in Wisconsin than normally do?
It's a great question. I think it's a combination of factors. One is a sense that the election in Wisconsin wasn't likely to be close. Although Donald Trump spent a lot of time in the state and made visits and some of his surrogates were here, the Clinton campaign was not as present. She famously didn't visit the state during the general election. But also the Clinton campaign didn't really run advertising, didn't have a presence on the ground with field offices and volunteers the way the Democratic campaigns in recent presidential elections had. And the polling indicated that she was in good shape all from Labor Day on. I don't think she trailed in a single public poll. So I think a lot of the public felt as though this was sort of a foregone conclusion and, you know, the outcome was not really in doubt. That turned out not to be the case. I think there are a variety of other factors as well, but that's probably the big one, just a sort of sense of lack of engagement by the Democratic campaign, in part reflecting the fact that it looked like a lopsided contest going into Election Day.
Bridget, let's talk about the tradition of voting. Some people responding to the question say that they are not alone.
Right. So I, in the interviews I've done, a lot of people say that their parents voted and, you know, everyone they know votes. And so they want to vote, too. So this is Jeannie Druckenmiller. She lives in the Madison area. She's a retired state worker. And here's what she had to say.
I always vote. Because I think it's a privilege, and it's just been very important to me. My parents always voted, and I think everybody should vote.
Barry, how important is it that people see others in their family and in their community voting? Does that affect the likelihood that they will vote?
Yes, it really does. And in fact, campaigns have figured this out, and there are now instances where campaigns are sending potential voters a mailer indicating their own voting history and the voting histories of their neighbors with a warning that we're watching. And just the idea that they're being monitored and
that's
that
creepy.
Their social behavior is being kept track of is enough. It is a little creepy, but it's also effective.
So are they likely to view voting as a privilege if that's the language that kind of people use in their neighborhood and their home?
Well, I think it varies by person. For some people, that kind of negative inducement is what pushes them to the poll, the fear of being embarrassed for not showing up or having been the one person who didn't vote in an election that was very close. But for others, there's a positive side that draws them to the polls. It's a social experience. If you're voting in person, you're likely to see your neighbors and friends, and you may be voting at a local school or church and see some other people from the community there, and there may be a bake sale going on, and it's a human endeavor, and that brings a lot of people to the voting experience, just to be part of that social activity.
We are talking about Wisconsin Public Radio's election series, Beyond the Ballot. We are asking six questions that dig into our relationship with voting. We'll be back exploring the question of whether people intend to vote in a moment. It's The Morning Show. Talking about Wisconsin Public Radio's election series, Beyond the Ballot. We are asking six questions that dig into our relationship with voting. We'll be back. We are talking to Bridget Bowden and Bruce. We are talking to Bridget Bowden right now about the people that they are talking to around the state. Bridget, you talked to somebody about... who said that it was important that they express their views.
Right. So a lot of people say that voting is, you know, kind of core to who they are. So this clip is Lindsay Menard, who works in county government in La Crosse. So she works in county government, and she says she sees how important voting is day to day firsthand.
And working in a local government setting, I see how every day we're influenced by public policy, and I think it's really important to have our voice be heard, especially as a young female. There's so many women that came before me years and years ago that fought for my right to vote, and so I think it's such a privilege that I'm able to do such a thing.
Barry Burden, a young female, you seeing this demographic coming up now and wanting to vote?
We are. There was a point in about the 1980s where the voting rates of women surpassed the voting rates of men, and that trend has continued, especially for high education women. They are one of the highest turnout groups. And I think back to the comment that opened that piece, she is voting as a way to express who she is and her sense of identity, and that's a common way that people, you know, find themselves involved in elections. It's an outlet for the things they care about and a way to send a message about who they are to people who will be elected officials.
And Bridget, what is the message that they're sending here, especially young people?
A lot of the young people that I've talked to, it may be their first time voting, or, you know, maybe only their fifth time.
Only their fifth time?
Well, you know, they're pretty young.
Right.
But a lot of the young people I've talked to have... They feel that it's really important, and they kind of feel like it's their time to finally have their voice heard.
Do young people understand the power of a single vote?
I think that many of them do. Many of the young people that I've talked to, do feel that it's very powerful.
You talked to one person who talked about how their vote counted. Let's play that now. Bauer.
So this is Timothy Bauer. He actually writes a blog about paddling in Wisconsin.
Interesting.
And yeah, so he says that voting is super important. He votes whenever he can. But he did talk about how some people maybe don't believe that their one vote counts.
There are those who believe that our votes don't count, literally and figuratively. There are those who don't even take that stand, but believe that neither candidate or party represents them, and they just feel like it doesn't matter either way.
Barry, that neither party represents them, that was a big thing in 2016. People were saying that Clinton and Trump were just alike and that they weren't going to vote. Is that something that you're seeing more, or have people kind of realized that maybe that wasn't the case?
Well, that's a really important driver of voter turnout. When voters see important differences between the parties, they're much more likely to participate. We've seen that over the years in survey data from one election to the next. When that sense of difference between the candidates exists, voters are just much more engaged. And I think in 2016, people viewed the presidential candidates as quite different from one another, but neither one was viewed as especially desirable or as taking politics in a wildly different direction necessarily. And so I think that caused a lot of people to sit home. And so simply becoming aware of what the candidates are about and the different things they have to offer, directions they may take government once they're in office, is a great way to engage people in the electoral process.
Bridget, how do different people interpret this question about the election, about their voting in this election? Does this election mean something different than it did in 2016 to them?
That's a good question. I would say for some people, specifically people who lean Democratic, there's kind of this resistance movement. So for many of those people, they see it as an opportunity to kind of flip seats. However, not everyone views it that way.
So how do they view it?
Some people view it as just another election. It really depends on what your political beliefs are, what issues are important to you.
So let's talk about issues. What issues are important to people? What concerns are they flagging?
Right. So that is actually question number two, is what issue is the most important to you this election season?
Interesting.
So we'll get to that another week. But all sorts of issues. People are talking about a wide variety of things, everything from healthcare to education, immigration, these hot button issues, but also small local things, ordinances that affect water quality. I've even heard someone talk about backyard chickens and how they can't have backyard
chickens
in their town. So people care about so many things, and it really varies person to person.
But, voting for governor isn't necessarily going to get you backyard chickens in your town. You just kind of need to move to another town or talk to the people who are in charge there.
Right, but your local elections might affect whether you can have backyard chickens. But the governor's election, who's elected governor, may very well affect your health care or how much money your school gets. So it all comes into play.
People are flagging concerns about other people voting, about voter turnout to you, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Like I said, pretty much everyone that we've talked to so far has said that they are voting, but lots of people have brought up concerns that not enough people vote. So this is Brenda Lutz Hansen, and she also works in county government in La Crosse, and she has a concern that not enough people are voting, and she sees that actually as a concern for the candidates themselves.
I think a lot of people don't vote primarily because they don't feel that they can contribute. They don't know why or what they're voting for. And so I see that as an extreme challenge for people who are running for office.
Extreme challenge for people who are running for office just to get people to the polls. Barry, we have a high turnout, but is it more than, say, 55% usually?
In a midterm election, no. It can be below 50% at times, even given Wisconsin's good record compared to other states.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it does very much depend on who the candidates are and how engaging the campaigns are. I suspect we're going to have a hard-fought governor's race and a hard-fought Senate race, and between those two, that'll drive turnout above 50%. The good news is that voting is sort of contagious in a good way, that having people around you who are engaged in the electoral process, who are regular voters, who are exerting a little bit of pressure, expressing the kind of concern that some of these folks have, sharing information about how to get involved in the process, that tends to mobilize friends and neighbors. And so it has a kind of positive contagion effect. I think we're going to see more of that probably in 2018 than we did at least in the last midterms back in 2014.
We are talking about WPR's Beyond the Ballot series, where we're essentially digging into your relationship with voting. We are taking your calls, 1-800-642-1234. And you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Barry, in terms of voter suppression, This is a big issue here now. Is there such a thing as voter suppression? Is it widespread? Does it, and do our efforts to combat it actually keep people from the polls?
Well, I think the major issue in Wisconsin has been the voter ID law that went into effect finally in a real way for the presidential election in 2016. We're still trying to figure out from a research perspective how much of the decline in turnout in 2016 in Wisconsin was due to the ID law versus other things like lack of interest in the candidates or the campaigns. It seems to have been a factor. It's difficult to put a number on that and say exactly how many voters were deterred from voting because of the requirement. But it is a concern, and we know that some elements of the electorate are more likely to be affected by that. People who don't have ID or have difficulty getting it. That tends to be younger people, people with lower incomes, people living in urban areas, Black and Latino residents of the state. So there are some challenges that I think are more serious for some voters than for others. And, you know, it's an ongoing effort by the state to try to educate people about the law and by parties, campaigns, churches, other groups that are trying to assist people in getting ID and understanding the law and help them navigate that process.
Bridget, when you talk to people and they say no, they're not voting, first of all, are you surprised?
Well, I am usually surprised when people say that because just it's so few people have said that. So out of the 130 or so interviews we've done, I would say less than five people have said
wow.
They're not voting.
And what are the reasons for not voting?
Either they are not 18.
Well, there's that. Okay.
Yeah. Or they maybe aren't a citizen. But in some cases, it's that they don't feel like their vote counts.
And how, Barry, this vote not counting issue, how do people kind of come to this conclusion? I mean, is it just because the vote is done in isolation? It's not necessarily done in a group setting that they feel, you know, they're pressing a button, they're pulling a lever. It doesn't feel momentous.
You know, it's hard to know what a person means when they say the vote doesn't matter. I think that probably has a couple different ideas inside of it. One might be that they don't trust the system of voting and they think that their vote won't be counted properly. There are sometimes myths out there about absentee ballots not being counted unless the election is close. That's not true. All the ballots are counted, but there are beliefs like that floating around. But then I think there's a second sense in which people say their vote doesn't matter in that they think the outcome of the election just doesn't matter to my life, or that the direction of the state or the country aren't likely to change because who's in office isn't important, or there are other things like interest groups and lobbyists or media or other factors that are driving the direction of things rather than the elected official. And so in that sense, they think my vote might be counted, but who actually is chosen isn't consequential. And that's why I say, you know, having a sense that there are real differences between the candidates and who's in office will determine the direction of government in a very serious way. That's a really serious motivator in bringing people to the polls.
Bridget, do people responding to your questions think of this more as an opportunity to change things or an obligation?
So there's one answer to this question that's pretty common, and I'll play you an example. This is Chris Bersian, who lives in Broadhead, and he said he always votes. So here's what he had to say. That's a pretty common answer.
I've always felt that voting is one of the few civic responsibilities that I really have to do. Otherwise, I feel like my voice won't be heard. I feel like I lose the right to complain if I don't vote.
So many people say, if I don't vote, I can't complain.
Right.
I have no way to prove that they're actually voting, but that is at least how they feel about voting.
Barry, the Supreme Court yesterday, or the day before, I think, had a decision in the Ohio law that people can be removed from voter rolls if they skip a few elections. What do you think about this decision?
Boy, it was a difficult decision. There are just technicalities of that law, known as the motor voter law, that were at issue in the case. And Ohio has a kind of unusual way of going about this, and they were the defendant in the case. And I think it reflects the ways in which the voting process has changed so dramatically in the last 20 years since Motor Voter was enacted. When Ohio created this process that was actually used by both Republican and Democratic secretaries of state, we didn't really have the computer technology or the sophistication to do the maintenance of the voter list the way most states do today. And so it's a little bit of an anachronism. And yesterday the court said they were going to let that anachronism stand, that they thought it was in compliance with the law. Fortunately, that doesn't really affect us one way or the other in Wisconsin. There is a system for removing people from the rolls in Wisconsin periodically, sending people a postcard to let them know they haven't voted in two federal elections and that they will be removed unless they verify that they want to stay enrolled. And that process, I think, will continue. And I think Wisconsin continues to have really one of the best election systems in the country. Not perfect. There are things that can be improved. That's always the case. But again, the high turnout rates, relatively high rates of registration, having same-day registration in particular, is really a fail-safe for lots of voters in Wisconsin.
And we do have same-day registration here. You can, and you can register for either party.
We do. And actually, there's no party registration in Wisconsin at all. You can vote for whoever you want in a primary or general election. And same-day registration turns out to be a saving grace for a lot of, especially those who may not be interested now as WPR talks with them, but as election day gets closer, they become more engaged. There are advertisements and debates and endorsements and other things happening in the campaign environment. For those people who become interested sort of at the last moment, there's, at least in Wisconsin, there's still an opportunity to go to the polls, register right on the spot, cast a ballot while you're there. It's one-stop shopping. It also tends to keep the voter rolls clean by letting people update their names and addresses on election day. So it's really helpful for keeping people in the process and keeping the voter rolls current.
Bridget, have you talked to people who are not registered to vote yet?
Actually, I haven't come across anyone yet. I'm sure that we will. Like I said, we've done about 130 interviews and our goal is 500. So we'll really be ramping up over the summer. And yeah, I'd love to hear from people who are not registered or maybe don't know how to get registered. I think that'd be interesting.
So where are you going? You've been to events. You're going to go to places over the summer. You're going to go to some rural areas. You're going to go to Milwaukee.
Yeah, we'll be all over the place. So our whole news team is engaged in this project and we have bureaus across the state in every major city. So we'll be going to events all over the state, which many of those events happen in the summer. Wisconsin weather. And we're also seeking out groups specifically that we know we want to reach, you know, women, seniors, people of color, and we're going straight to them.
Can people come to us? Can people like come to the website and fill out the form and you will consider that and talk, maybe do a follow-up interview with them?
Yes, they can. We would love that. We have a form you can fill out online. It's at WPR.org/ballot on the Share Your Story tab. And people have been pretty engaged with that. We've had quite a few answers come in through that survey. Which is awesome. People tell us what's important to them. And then, you know, if we start to see trends, we can reach back out to those people and hopefully get some stories on our air about those
topics. Starting to see trends even already?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We've done a couple of stories based on trends that people were telling us. We did one about water quality. People are really concerned about their water quality, and that's actually a huge issue that's driving people to vote.
Interesting.
Another thing that we saw as a trend was people are concerned about rural populations and whether there are enough young people deciding to live in the rural areas of the state enough to keep the economy up.
We are actually talking to Representative Gallagher tomorrow, and he talks about that a lot, so we'll follow up on that. We are talking about WPR's Beyond the Ballot series, which explores Wisconsinites' relationship to voting. We want to hear from you on this, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@WPR.org. If you are a tweeter, tweet WPR Mornings. We'll be back in a moment. It's the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Bridget Bowden has been asking people all over the state six questions. She's curating WPR's Beyond the Ballot series. And today we're digging into the first question. Are you voting? Bridget is joined by UW political science professor and voting expert Barry Burden. We are also taking your calls this morning, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Now, Bridget, the question here is, why are you doing this series? And how did you come up with these actual six questions?
Yeah, so we wanted to do something this year, this election year, that would help us tap into what is important to the people of Wisconsin. In our day-to-day news coverage, we hear a lot from the politicians and candidates themselves. We hear a lot from people who work for them. We hear a lot from people like Barry, you know, experts, academic people. We don't hear a lot from regular people, especially on the news, especially about politics. So that was one of the things that we wanted to fix with this project. So we came up with the idea of interviewing as many people as we could this year about these topics. And we came up with the six questions kind of as a way to standardize all of those interviews. So we make sure that everybody is given a chance to weigh in on kind of the same topics. Mm-hmm. The way that we came up with the questions was our whole news team, about 10 people, we got together, had a meeting, and we wrote out a very long list of questions that we thought would be good, and then kind of narrowed it down to these six. And I will say that there are several questions that are actually two questions in one.
Right, like this one.
Right.
Is, did you vote, and are you and going to vote, and did you vote in 2016?
Exactly.
So, yes, right.
So we also have the opportunity for follow-up questions. We're not sticking just to these six questions. We will often ask follow-ups to dig deeper into what's important to people.
So what are your six questions?
So this first question, are you voting this year? Did you vote in 2016? Question number two is, what issue is the most important to you and why? Question number three is, do you feel like your elected officials reflect you and your community? Question four is a two-parter. Can you tell me about a time the government did something that helped you? Could you tell me about a time the government did something that hurt you? Question number, what am I on, five?
Yeah.
Five is, do you have any questions for the candidates? And then the final question is, what's going on in your community that nobody's talking about?
And are you finding that there's a disconnect between what people are telling you and what the candidates are talking about?
I would say that it's too early to tell, actually. Right now we're getting a lot of answers about issues. Obviously, that's a major thing that drives people to the polls, is issues that affect their lives. But also, at this point, we are so far out from the fall elections that, you know, some people, when we ask them, are you voting, they'll say, well, what election? we have the primary. We started asking these questions back in February when there were still numerous elections before the fall.
Right.
So not yet.
Not yet. Barry, do you see a disconnect between what people are saying is important to them and what what politicians are saying to them?
Yes, I think there is a disconnect, and part of that is that the primary is the next election. So the conversation that's happening among the candidates right now is within the parties. The Democratic candidates running for governor are trying to distinguish themselves from one another. And so they're talking about things like marijuana legalization and other issues that I think have become sort of more important to the Democratic Party in recent years, but might not be the top issues in November. And likewise, on the Republican side, where you have two candidates fighting it out for the Senate nomination, they're competing with one another to try to out-conservatize and, be on the right flank compared to the other. And that conversation will change when it comes to the general election, where it's that candidate versus Democrat Tammy Baldwin. I was interested in Bridget's sense that water quality and some other issues were coming up in interviews, and I think those are things the candidates are not talking much about, and so there may be some places where there's a little mismatch. I think in November we're going to see a lot of conversation about the Foxconn plant that's opening in southeast Wisconsin, the environmental impact, the economic impact, and that may not be something that's on the radar screen for all voters just yet, and the candidates are a little ahead of them, but I think those things will come together in late fall, and you'll see a lot of conversation about a core number of topics for both candidates and voters.
You know, I remember in 2016, Hillary Clinton, it actually may have been 2015, she was meeting with voters and came out and said that she was surprised that almost everybody she met with was talking about opioids, that wasn't on her radar screen. Do you think that there are issues that the candidates just aren't seeing right now?
Yeah, I think there are some that candidates are aware of, but they're difficult. They're just difficult public policy issues. Transportation in Wisconsin would be an example. The conditions of roads and bridges have deteriorated. There's a dispute in the Capitol about how to fund those improvements and to what degree we ought to be funding them. And the state really has not come up with a solution for that problem, but we realize that it's going to be a growing one. And it's something that average Wisconsinites actually feel every day in driving to work or commuting to an airport in Milwaukee or someplace. They feel the roads, and it's for the trucking industry and others, it's a really serious concern. So that's one where I think, you know, voters have a sense that something needs to be done, and politicians have not yet stepped up to the plate to fix it.
And in fact, the governor actually canceled a rail project. Did that dishearten people?
Yeah, that was a key pledge going back to 2010 when Scott Walker was first elected to end the planned high-speed rail between Madison and Milwaukee. So that's part of the bigger transportation picture that involves roads, bridges, toll roads we've had conversations about, airports and other, even small airports around the state. So, that's an issue that's not going away anytime soon. I suspect we could have this show in 2020 or 2022 and we'd still be talking about transportation and infrastructure, whether the candidates end up offering voters real alternatives on that issue and it becomes a hot topic in the debates in the fall is yet to be seen. But I think it's one that voters really feel on a day-to-day basis and would like to see something done about.
We've got Diane from Milwaukee calling. Diane, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey.
Well, they asked why people are discouraged from voting, and I think one very obvious reason is that the Electoral College vote supersedes the popular vote anyways, and it's very discouraging.
Well,
what happened with Hillary, what happened with Al Gore, the majority of the people voted for them, and they did not win the election. In fact, when the election returns come in, they barely show what the popular vote is doing. The returns on television all show what the Electoral College is voting.
So thank you, Diane. Barry, the electoral vote, first of all, most people did not vote for Hillary in Wisconsin, and we are talking about state elections here. And most of that popular vote, didn't it come from California?
That's right. So in 2016, Clinton won the popular vote. Trump won the Electoral College vote. He narrowly won Wisconsin by less than a percentage point. Her popular vote total was driven up by doing well in some very big states like California. But I think, the feeling that Diane's expressing that the structure of elections is disheartening is something that the public does feel from time to time. The Electoral College won't be an issue this year, obviously, because the presidency is not on the ballot. But concerns about gerrymandered districts or other voting processes that people feel are unfair or don't allow the views of the voters to be reflected fairly, that can be discouraging. There are some interesting experiments going on in the states. Maine today is now going to move to what looks like a ranked choice voting process for electing gubernatorial elections, congressional elections, and others. So I think for voters who are discouraged, keep involved in the process because there are some really interesting things that are happening across the states, and Wisconsin could be part of that conversation.
And the ranked choice is what happened in California, right?
Sort of. So there was a primary in California last week, and it's called the top two primary because there the top two candidates move on to the general election regardless of party. So in many places in the state, it's two Democrats, say, who got the most votes in the primary. And they'll face one another, which guarantees in those districts that a Democrat's elected because Republicans not on the ballot. That's another kind of experiment that's going on, and there are now two or three states with some version of that.
We have two special elections that are going on right now. Barry, are you watching these elections, and what are you expecting from them?
There are two special elections today in Wisconsin, one assembly seat and one state senate seat that are replacing two outgoing members who retired back in December. I view these as kind of another canary in the coal mine about what's likely to happen in 2018. We've had one special election in Wisconsin already, which was a state senate race in the northwestern part of the state in the 10th district. And that surprisingly was won by a Democrat, Patty Schachter, despite the fact that that district had gone overwhelmingly for Trump in 2016. The two districts that are at play today are like that district. Both of them went for Trump by double digits. So if Democrats manage to win them tonight or even make it close, I think that's a real sign that the kind of blue wave that people have been talking about is a real thing, not just nationwide, but in Wisconsin.
And do you think that we're going to be talking about Trump and the North Korea summit? Do you think that's going to have an effect on the way people vote today?
It's a long ways to go from the North Korean summit to a special election in an assembly district. But the nice thing about the midterm elections is we have both federal races on the ballot and state races. So if your concern as a voter is North Korean nuclear weapons or trade and tariffs, there will be a U.S. Senate race on the ballot, and the Senate obviously has a role to play in foreign affairs and approving treaties. If your concern is about water in Wisconsin or transportation or schooling or anything else, there's a governor's race. The entire state assembly is on the ballot, half of the state Senate, lots of local races, as Bridget mentioned. If your concern is chickens or anything else that's more parochial, there's an opportunity for you as a voter to get out and have something to say about that whole range of issues from top to bottom.
You were just listening to Barry Burton. He's a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's director of the Elections Research Center at UW and Lyons Family Chair in Electoral Politics. Bridget Bowden is special projects reporter at Wisconsin Public Radio. She is project managing our Beyond the Ballot series, which is looking to get closer to why we vote. Thank you for being here, Bridget.
Thanks so much for having me.
And thank you for being here, Barry.
Yeah, glad to be with you.
Coming up at this time tomorrow, we're looking at veterans in Wisconsin. We'll talk about the VA Mental Health Summit and why leaders are putting an emphasis on African-American veterans. It's The Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman, and you are listening to the Ideas Network.